the Regenerative Hour.
Today I'm out in Norlane in the north of Geelong in what I would call suburbia. This is really what you understand as suburbia. It looks very civilized. All the houses have these neat gardens in front of them and very quiet. There's barely any people in the street. Some kids playing though. And out here lives one of these characters that we have in this city who is on a journey transforming the city from within. In this case, a musician who lives in a kind of a, I think it is a garage, has a music studio and has his first EP out. Quinn Earthchild. Welcome to the Regenerative Hour. It's great to have the opportunity here to talk to you about the corona crisis, about where we're heading from here. I often talk about it's like as if we're coming out of a tunnel. We've been sitting in the Zoom tunnel for a long time, and now we're finally allowed again to meet and sit in front of each other like we are now, sitting having a cup of tea, eating some of the dried fruits from your garden, and I think even the tea is also from the garden, which is beautiful. I love the environment that you have here with plants and lots of different, I would say, rather strange-looking experiments happening on all the shelves and lots of books as well. And then the little music studio there in the corner where you produce the songs that we're going to hear during this particular hour. It'll be a mix of you talking about your songs and what you are putting into them and also why you're making this kind of music.
The whole EP is a balance between the hope and grief of growing up in suburbia and trying to come to terms with ecological crises all mounting around us, being raised and socialized in a system that tries to pretend it isn't happening, and trying to come of age as somebody taking responsibility for a lot of these things and trying to develop and grow into a person who can create some of these alternative systems to help solve a lot of these problems. A lot of it is just grieving, really doing the emotional work, which artwork is so good for. Like, music is healing, it's therapy, and it's also a great way to process emotions. So the whole album is full of artistic metaphors. I think the largest one being the balance between disassociation and mindfulness, and trying to find that balance where you have enough of a cocoon around you, especially as an artist, to stay sane, to stay nice and red and vital and healthy and resist all the distressing issues that are happening long enough to develop enough resilience and education and empowerment to be able to affect some positive change, so that the world you come out into will slowly be better, so you can spend more time mindful and present and not experiencing constant emotional distress by what's happening. So the first track on the EP is called Space Time, and it's about me trying to fathom some perspective about being here on this planet right now. And it's about realizing that I'm just kind of an animal on a stone flying through space around the sun, because I find the perspective of realizing our universal insignificance actually quite reassuring and quite humbling. And from that place, it's a very nice place to be able to then work from. I tend to have this cycle in my brain where working as a sustainability educator and as a permaculturist, because everything happening can be so overwhelming and disempowering, often gets to a place where the sadness creeps in and I think, well, what's the point? You know, everything I do kind of doesn't have a larger impact in the big scheme of things. And then there's this voice in me that says, well, even if that's true, then just keep doing whatever makes you happy then, which is actually taking responsibility for my environment and trying to work with my community and trying to weave myself back into this local ecosystem as much as I can, which is the work that I want to be doing anyway. So I end up back in the same place, but just with a bit less grief. So that's kind of what the song's about as well.
Since the system begun, going in cycles around the first sun, drawing us in with her ways and her breath, caught spinning moons around the seams of her dress, through
without addressing the grief that we're experiencing, I think everybody feels it on some kind of level, and our culture's very good at numbing with sugar or caffeine or media. I think it's very, very difficult to take responsibility for the grief that we've inherited, and we're in the privileged bubble of being in a perfect little ecological community until they were 18 and then able to consent about being able to participate in a society that's so inherently, ecologically, and personally destructive. And so I think we have all inherited this grief in a lot of ways, whether we're privileged enough to be insulated from most of it or not. And I think it's so important that we have spaces in our communities, whether it's our own personal art forms or groups that will acknowledge this kind of huge weight which we're often bearing, so that we can live mindfully and presently in our life doing good work to battle some of these injustices and not feel the need to just put our head in the sand and disassociate away from it into media or other people's worlds and have this integrated perspective. But that can be difficult.
Another response could be anger. Fossil fuels are, you know, easily lit, and it's not that difficult to imagine a world in a few years' time, if there's no change, where the youth will come in a more violent way. in response to the inaction.
Absolutely, and it's such a volatile mix that as our generation has inherited all of these problems, like being born or coming of age in cultures and on a planet that is experiencing such ecological crisis and collapse in so many ways, to inherit that is hard enough, and then to be in a culture that refuses to talk about it, let alone offer viable ways of dealing with that grief or combating the huge ecological and social injustices that we're facing, is so hard for young people. And I think that's why most young people just turn off and they switch off. And anger is such a helpful emotion. And I think it's difficult in our culture where people aren't comfortable having authentic emotions and there isn't space for real emotional responses to these issues, and people shut down real conversation. People want some kind of good vibes only. Let's just be charismatic and smiley and, you know, get on with business as usual. And these spaces, you know, we need to create them. We need to have time to work through this grief. And I think an angry response is totally valid, and it's difficult to resist the temptation as a very well-educated person on these issues to not resort to violent methods of disassembling these systems, which are ultimately causing so much more violence than would be enacted by attacking them. And there is so much valid conversation around, you know, peak oil collapse looming on the horizon. We're experiencing peak everything and so much ecological destruction and social unrest, and with these very conservative estimations of the effects of climate change through science institutions. Well, the conversation is then if these systems are going to come to a collapse, why not come to a collapse sooner so that we can actually become to deal with these problems that are going to have to be addressed, of overpopulation, of our current agricultural systems not being set up to be in a position where we can start to feed people sustainably or have enough water available. You know, we're also reaching peak water. We're not using any resources wisely whatsoever. And so the longer we go on this path where we're not addressing the ecological realities of these resources we're consuming beyond a sensible rate, the harder it's going to be able to do something about it. But I think as a permaculturist, that's the path I've chosen as well, is slowly working away at creating a small demonstration of what it is like to live within our means, resource-wise. So here, at the cottage in Norlane, we're restoring this small house, and we're having more people live here, and we're converting all available space to ecologically integrated gardens. We're trying to integrate flowers and natives into the vegetable productions. We're trying to encourage local wildlife with ponds. We're trying to become a refuge for the wildlife. We're also trying to grow as much of our own food as possible, working with the farm next door community in Forrester Street in Norlane, and local working bees that we're starting with Transition Norlane to start slowly transitioning our community into a more sustainable and localized and resilient community.
And that's opening the chapter for hope, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's so much effort, like doing all this stuff is so much hard work, and it's so much easier to just sit around and talk about the problems that are existing. Actually picking up a shovel and starting to tear a lawn apart and then, you know, plant some vegetables or start planting some natives or regenerating the local creek, which is in a terrible way, is so much harder. But then there's so much more, you know, you just feel so much better because it's not just about this work, because it's also feeding your mental health and you're doing your exercise. I mean, I love that meme I read somewhere of, let's take a moment of silence for everyone who drove a half an hour in peak hour traffic to the gym just to sit on a stationary bike for half an hour. It's in permaculture we talk about a lot, and Bill Mollison was quoted saying it, that, you know, maintaining a permaculture that's going to feed us and foster our community and offer refuge for local wildlife and start drawing down carbon and restoring the water tables is going to give us enough exercise that we need to be healthy, happy and functioning human beings. And these are the kind of habits that our ancestors from wherever we came from in the world had to do, because pre-oil and pre-industry, that's how we evolved to function. And so it's so satisfying to sit down and shell beans or weave nets while you talk with the community that you love, or where it's so innate in all of us, these kind of processes. The third song on the EP is called Tomorrow, and it's a big question mark on my future as a young person growing up in suburban Australia. Growing up, finding refuge in all the little broken places between the cracks, the places where nature's had enough time to kind of get a bit of a hold back, the wild herbs that our ancestors as Europeans used for medicine and food, and a lot of species which, even though aren't indigenous, are still providing an ecological role. Whenever I was sad or distressed as a child, that's where I'd go to find refuge and some kind of belonging, and like something was okay. And so the song is a lot about that, and then dealing with the realities of those environments even being endangered by council legislation or by pollution or just the unsustainability of modern life. Yeah. a lot of these songs that I wrote was when I was 16, just kind of in the later stages of high school, trying to come to terms with what I'm going to do with my life once I'm released from the institutions I was put into in public school. I've definitely personally struggled a lot with the toxic concept of self-sufficiency as a human being, and I think especially as going through my adolescence and experiencing homelessness to a degree and making my own things and trying to take back autonomy from these systems I was born into, the capitalism and patriarchy and consumerism, and trying to produce these all of the resources I needed to survive, really burnt me out in a lot of ways, because these processes our ancestors would have all practiced with the community. And it's difficult to be trying to grow our own food, make our own clothing, salvage as much as we can from these resources that have already been created in a context where we don't have the support of our ancestors who have been doing it forever. It isn't the social norm anymore, and it's so difficult to do it whilst struggling against the status quo and to resist the constant comfort and convenience of our culture, which is being advertised at us with full volume. I mean, more psychological research goes into advertising than genuine psychological research, and we have to come to terms with the fact that we're just animals in pants, and we're so bombarded all the time, and when we're in these systems that are so fundamentally unsustainable and ecocidal and antisocial. But that's the norm that we've been put in, and it's so hard to even see it at most times, let alone do something productive about it. And so I'm really grateful I'm in a place of privilege where I've been able to receive a permaculture education and seek it out and find enough resources and enough space just from making ends meet to be able to nurture these skills, relocalize a lot of my needs, and have enough space to start to work with the community around me. And we have such a great community coming up in the North Geelong with the farm next door and local agriculture initiatives, and we're really starting to see some change happening. The next song on the EP is called Melancholy Bay, and it's a big metaphor about growing up in Geelong in the north and being in the shadow of the Shell refinery the entire time and experiencing global shipping happening on a very local level, and the very tangible insignificance of my existence on that scale in comparison to industry. And going into that metaphor about, in those dark times, weaving this artistic cocoon that's going to give me enough space and wholeness to work through and develop a bit more empowerment and education and resources to start affecting more change. And so the whole metaphor of the EP being called Cinnamon Dreamboat is about that, about feeling like I want to leave this place that gave me so much grief, but then also realizing that that's the place where I need to create and affect change. So making the Cinnamon Dreamboat, which is the artistic metaphor of creating a safe kind of disassociative artistic cocoon so that I can come back in and do that work that needs to be done. The last track on the EP is kind of a spoken word accompaniment over an acoustic little track I wove on the classical guitar, and it's just recorded on the phone, and it's a discussion about that struggle between hope and grief as an environmentally conscious person and young person in this culture, and trying to keep everything in balance and maintain motivation in the face of these big looming catastrophes to affect the change that I can within my small circle.
the fragile balance between my hope and my grief, each as equally matched and as equally fed. The dance which holds off my tears, yet strikes me silent as I gaze over the destruction of civilization. From a patch of blooming thistles, hope dances in the dapples of yellows and pinks and greens. They meet in the parched pastel shades of brown, in the dry Australian bush, poised to be relieved by rain or to explode into flames at any moment. Is it I who measure the balance and decide the fate? Who knew in such stillness I could find no rest from the movements of my mind and heart? As they tumble and twirl over whether or not I should be moved to tears or to dancing, I crave the rest to be found. I almost wish for the firestorm, so that my soul could send up tender verdant shoots from the blackened remains of it all, and I could just get on with living.
So, Quinn, what's this thing about the surname Earthchild? Is that your real name?
Well, it's certainly not my birth name, but when I was 11 and I started to experience a lot of solastalgic distress about the environment, I needed some way to kind of make a statement that I wasn't going to sit back, and also an insurance to keep me from being lulled into complacency and just kind of being absorbed into the culture as I grew up. And so by changing my name to Earthchild, colloquially, even at the time I acknowledged how kind of embarrassingly simple that is, and being like stereo or cast typed as the bohemian hippie type, but it was so empowering for me because it was a statement that enabled me to create some change around of being socially held accountable. Standing up to be recognized as a child of the earth, as we all are. And I also liked the fact that it kind of dismissed my family ties and acknowledged my fundamental sameness with every other person, because we are all just children of the earth in the end, and we all have to make decisions based on all being one big family. And all these big statements sound so cliche, but they're cliche for a reason, I think, because they're so universally true. And for me personally, at least, it really helped with my development into an ecologically conscious person.
So is being an Earth Child almost like a logo for a movement?
Oh, I don't think I'm narcissistic enough to presume as much, but if people felt like identifying as Earth Children, go for it. I've definitely come across small references of other people using that term since embracing the name, and I definitely feel like using it for my art and my music and just being known as it definitely helps to immediately let people know what my point is and where I'm coming from.
I've been very inspired by Greta and the way she speaks out. And you know, there's this whole hashtag Tell the Truth, which in a way was started by Greta Thunberg from Sweden, the 17-year-old climate activist who've now been speaking to every government almost on the planet. And she says things as they are. She really explains it in a way where I feel like she is a voice for me just as well. And I've started using the hashtag Voices for Greta because I'm beginning to think we don't need to reinvent the wheel here. We can just say, I want to be a voice for Greta, you know. I actually can make some changes. Maybe I can go into politics. Maybe I can be a candidate or something. And I can be that voice for Greta. She's 17. She's not allowed to vote yet or to go into politics, but I am. And I can be that voice. But with the talk about your name, I'm thinking maybe we need some voices for the earth.
Definitely. Well, I feel like labels can be so problematic and kind of make things more simple than they are. And we're so complex and individual. But the one great thing about them is that by associating with a label, is standing up and saying, I represent something. I consider myself a voice for the earth. And I think my music is a way that I can express my own grief from my personal experience as an animal, but also as a member of the wider ecosystem that is experiencing such great distress, and which causes me so much distress growing up in a culture that refused to acknowledge that. And I mean, it just made me feel so schizophrenic watching the world burn and everybody around me plaster smiles on their face and pretend like it wasn't happening. And I feel like for young people today, me coming into actual adulthood now, I'd really love to see more acknowledgement, more authentic conversations around it's difficult. We're inheriting a broken planet. We're inheriting dysfunctional ecosystems. We're inheriting social, agricultural, and economic systems that do not work. And if we did all of this and destroyed the planet and were so anthropocentric just so we could be happy and healthy, maybe it'd be worth it, but it doesn't work that way, and it's gone against our best interests in the end as well.
Thank you.
So this song that I recently recorded, Raincoat Made of Scars, was really big for me as my my development as a musician and as an artist, trying to accept radical honesty and transparency, because I feel as an artist and as a sustainability educator living within consumerism, I experienced all this pressure, often unspoken, to be good vibes only, always smiling. If you're trying to convince people about all these environmental issues, they're not going to listen to you if you're upset. But now, working with permaculture, offering viable solutions-based and solutions-focused stuff, it's a very different story. And I think now people, more than ever in the face of all this, need to understand that we're all humans, and I'm grieving, and I've gone through a journey, and it's been difficult. And even though I've been trying to go through this path of radical sustainability, I've also been experiencing other issues which can add on to that or experience side by side of. And sometimes, like, you just need to know that someone's a real person. And sometimes that's what matters most. And so this is a very raw and honest and a bit grungy, but language warning.
Upside down, from atop my pile of privilege, feeling guilty for feeling drowned. I pick poisons behind factories, search for food in toxic lanes. Worked for scumbags, knowing nothing. Walked for days, avoided planes. I've been frantic, I've been hungry, I've been tired, but I've been free. Sleeping on the bridges, over train rides and up trees. I've been frantic, I've been hungry, I've been tired, but I've been free. Sleeping under bridges, over train rides and up trees. Run from this urban lie, I've watched my mother almost die. I've picked up trash and planted rivers, tried to keep out clear blue skies. Made a backpack for my trauma, it's recycled, don't you know. Carried it up mountains, lugged it everywhere I go. I've been frantic, I've been tired, I've been hungry, I've been free. Sleeping under bridges, over train rides and up trees. I've been frantic, I've been hungry, I've been tired, but I've been free. Sleeping under bridges, over train rides and up trees. Cycling guilt up hills, full tilt in sunshine, hail, rain or snow. Disowned almost everything, crude oil built, yeah, it's a lot, I know. World is based on lies. Can't you hear the planet's cries? Ignorance shelters privilege, and it's the ecology that dies. All those fucking lies, it's the ecology that dies. All those fucking lies, it's the ecology that dies. I'm so fucking tired, but at least I fucking tried. I'm so fucking tired, but at least I fucking tried. Hide from the roar of the civil engines and the cracks full of weeds. See the future in the hedges, localize all your needs. I'm just another stray, sleeping out under the stars. At least I feel a part of something real in my raincoat made of scars. Raincoat made of stars. Raincoat made of stars. Raincoat made of scars. Raincoat made of scars.
I think the really reassuring thing for me is when I realized that I didn't have to reinvent the wheel, that there's communities all over the world and so many books and resources on permaculture and community resilience and learning all of these ancestral skills that are so important, like even just how to properly look after ourselves, how to properly use our bodies, how to actually develop and maintain healthy relationships and work through conflict with other people and do that kind of people care work that will allow us to work together to restore our ecosystems in our communities. And I think a lot of these discussions can be really overwhelming. I think we need to acknowledge that for me, starting on this journey, part of the reason I did it is because I didn't have an option. Like, I was so overwhelmed as a youth growing up, experiencing anxiety and depression and dealing with eating disorders and a whole bunch of stuff and lots of consumer guilt, which I think a lot of mainstream environmentalism is guilty of actually continuing, that I actually had to find these wholesome alternatives of living and looking after myself and my community in order just to function. Because I think our culture can be overwhelming, and living in these urban environments is terrifying. I mean, we are just animals. It's ridiculous to think that, you know, we're just expected to be able to function all the time. We're just expected to be in a place where we can constantly work or study. And I think that's the inhumanity of consumerism, where we're not considered to be actual human animal beings. And there isn't room to be sick. There isn't room for our natural rhythms of sometimes being incapable of these expectations of us. And so I think lots of compassion is in order for everyone all the time. And I think having space to slowly work with what we're able to do, how we're able to do it, and when. Something that really helped me so much is when one of my best friends gave me that Arthur Ashe quote, who's actually a tennis player, but it's often very well associated with permaculture, of start where you are, use what you have, and do what you can. And that was just so reassuring for me. And especially with mindfulness, to just remember to come back to where we are at any point, consider what we've got at hand to be able to use, and start there. Like, start in our backyards, start with something small, and just slowly work out in our circles of influence. We don't have to do these huge, big things. We don't have to stop whaling ships, although, you know, if you can, go for it. But sometimes the most radical thing we can do is just to stop and take accountability for our own actions. Turn up, like, get to a point where we can actually be mindful. And if we need to have a little cocoon for a while and do some self-care, that's fine. But when we can come back to the present moment, pick up a shovel and start taking the lawn apart and just plant one thing. Or learn the wild herbs and weeds in your area that can be used as medicine or food. Find one thing a day that you can eat from your local environment and slowly build off that until it amplifies over time. Because we're going to be spending this time anyway, so we may as well be slowly working towards the future we want to see in everything that we do. At the moment, we're working to create Transition Norlane, which is a group of like-minded locals in here in Norlane that are working together to try and transition our community tangibly out of the grips of consumerism and more to kind of a wholesome and ecologically regenerative producing and socially cohesive culture. So it's all well and good for us to have these huge discussions about all the looming and terrifying environmental issues, but I think one of the main failings of mainstream environmentalism is all this shame, blame, the world's burning, which it is, and it's hard not to have that discussion, that very real discussion, and express the grief about it. But as humans, if we're not offered viable alternatives, we just shut off. Like, if I can't do anything about it, I don't want to be shamed. Like, and we didn't consent to be born into this culture that's so toxic, and for everyone, including ourselves and all of the rest of the ecosystems. And so permaculture is really good because it's solutions-based. It's all about, what are we going to do? It's like, okay, you're upset with the way the culture is, but what are you going to do about it? And so at Transition Norlane, where after COVID, we're going to continue with a pattern we started to establish of working with the tried and tested perma-blitzing system, where we come together as a community and we pick someone's yard who volunteers, and as a permaculture designer, me and other people will come together to work with the person whose yard it is, and we'll create a collaborative design of their yard, of how they want it to be, with natives and lots of food production, all organically integrated, really can take everything into account of what they will use, what the community will use, and how we can do it tangibly with recycled resources or what we have at hand. You know, we're not talking about pumping money into things or going to Bunnings for huge trips. We're talking about grabbing whatever rusted tools we can and getting together to do some grassroots de-lawning, which is really great. And so we had the first one here at Earthchild Cottage, which was amazing. And growing up here as a kid, it was so disempowering trying to get out and do stuff when our entire yard was just overrun by couch grass, which is just bamboo level horror. It's the bane of our existence. I've spent like my whole life battling against this grass. And it goes so deep down, and working as just an individual, it's so hard to manage. But if you get 5, 10, 20 people all with shovels at one point, you can remove all the grass from the backyard that's causing all these issues instantly, and it's so empowering, and it gives you this time to work with your hands while you develop relationships with these people in your community, and it's bonding us, and then we're working to create more food resilience when we plant and we mulch and we grow these vegetables and we talk about where they came from, how to propagate the seedlings, what do you do with that vegetable, how do you actually cook it, you know? And then you come together for a meal in these times with the perma-blitzers, and after everyone's worked, we all eat together and have a great time where it's, you know, you're planting the food, but then you're also eating it as well. And the more of these we do in the neighborhood, the more work gets done, and it's just so much more sustainable socially and emotionally to do these big catalytic working bees rather than everybody slowly working away by themselves, because we really are so much more powerful together than we are, and more than are some of our parts. So that's a really great, tangible and systematic way to start working within these small communities to have a really large effect that echoes on.
So close to land, and you won't budge to lend a hand. I can't
reason away loneliness. I refuse to believe that this is my only choice.
I can't take this silence anymore. I can't take this silence.
Mistreated and used like this. I'm sick of being so used to this, pretending you're so useless. I refuse to be abused like this, to be mistreated and used like this. I say that we've grown so used to this, pretending that you're useless. I refuse to be abused like this, to be mistreated and used like this. I hate that we've grown so used to this, pretending that you're useless.
I can't take this silence anymore. I can't take this silence anymore. Can't you hear me roar? Fair weather friend.